Hi, you're listening to the Australian Women Writers Podcast in conversation with I'm Marissa Vikramanagar, and today we're talking to Tinashe Shakwa, who is a Zimbabwean writer whose work has just been published in The Ways of Being Here, African Short Story Anthology, published by the Center for Stories and Margaret River Press. We're going to be talking about authorial intent as well as the problems with transferring stories from an oral tradition into a written context. And I will just go ahead and let Tinashe introduce herself.
My name is Tinashe Jakwa, and I am currently studying for a Master of International Relations at the University of Western Australia. And I am one of the authors of The Ways of Being Here, African Short Story Anthology, published by Margaret River Press together with the Center for Stories.
So tell us why you started writing. Why did you want to write? Writing in general?
Writing in general, I guess my main motivation is self-honesty, trying to confront various aspects about myself and surroundings and my relationships with the people around me that would otherwise be uncomfortable and that I would otherwise push down and away. Writing pushes me to look at them head on and address them, but it's not always an easy endeavor, given you can start writing something and then immediately put it aside simply because it's too hard to push past those walls and those barriers that you've built up for yourself when it comes to certain things. So writing is about self-honesty, revisiting parts about myself, my heritage, my family that I may have forgotten, and it's a this remembering process, which is always fraught and filled with many dislocations. And although it does bring clarity to a lot of my actions and a lot of the things that I do, it also reveals that we can't ever get as great a clarity about any number of things as you might otherwise like. But I like the murky waters of writing.
You like exploring all those things.
Exactly, I do.
I like that you talk about murky waters. I find your work, No Child of One's Own, very interesting because I have to read it several times because I feel like it's very layered and I feel you're not going to get it all on the first go. And when you first read it for the first time, there are lots of things to keep track of.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because you are expecting one full narrative all the way through, and it's not that at all, is it? It's not. It's fragmented and trying to make sense of it all. And I like the way that you've written it because I feel like you obviously had some intent or meaning, but I think like you can take different meanings from different things. So at first, you know, I'm like, oh right, is this someone else's child she's talking about? You read a little bit further and then you're like, oh wait, is this actually something metaphorical? Yeah.
I would contest that I had a single meaning in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely did not approach the story looking to craft a linear narrative, and like mm-hmm. you said, that's very much apparent. But even when I go back to read it,
mm-hmm.
I always take away something new each time. That's a very cliche thing to say, but it's very true. And I'm always surprised because with something that you create yourself,
mm-hmm.
in a sense, you always, there's a tendency to expect that you'll understand it in exactly the same way each time you revisit it, and that there'll be nothing to surprise you when you do revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know all the ins and outs of it. But the No Child of One's Own is a story that in many ways is no child of one of my own. It's really a collection of memories from a lot of my family members, and I've tried to write it in a way that looks at the different challenges that people are faced with in life, the hope, the joy they manage to maintain in their lives, and the continuities between each of those distinct but similar experiences and how they have informed my being here today. In a sense, it's an homage to those who have gone past me and who are still present with me. And it's a way of grounding myself, but also a way of showing that however contained in our own experience we may be, we can't fully separate ourselves from others. And that's in many ways a reflection of how I've been brought up by my parents throughout the years.
So what made you want to write this particular piece then?
Initially, I wasn't intending to enter the competition. I was very much apprehensive about sharing parts of myself with the public in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a different kind of apprehensiveness, because with my more academic writing, I have no misgivings about it being published and people engaging with it. But when you come to, I guess, biographical writing, that's bringing you back down to the human factor, and there is a lot of vulnerability there. And so when I wrote this story, it was initially in 2012. It wasn't anything like it is in the anthology, but I was going through a very rough patch, struggling with depression at the time. And I just had things on my mind, on my heart, that I wanted to express but couldn't quite. There was a constant heaviness that comes with living in Australia, that comes with a migrant experience in Australia, that I was trying to give voice to, but I never quite got there. And through submitting to the Centre for Stories for this competition, after Yerga encouraged me to submit, I ended up realizing that in order to make sense of the heaviness that I've been experiencing and struggling to give voice to, I needed to start engaging me and having conversations with the people around me who matter the most, because my experience and in many ways my pain is very much intertwined with theirs. There's a kind of intergenerational sharing of pain and joy that I wanted to highlight in writing My Child of One's Own.
I like that you say that there's a heaviness about being a migrant in Australia. I find that to be so true, because I myself am also a migrant here. There is a heaviness, and I like, it feels like a very sort of a fog surrounding you that you have to kind of cut your way through and move through always. So it, you know, whereas everyone else moves through air, you have to push a little bit and struggle a bit. And
exactly. It's as though there's something always constricting your breathing and your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
To take in the air around you, which is even worse in Perth, particularly with this weather currently and the humidity. You don't need layers upon layers of suffocation.
I wanted to ask you, what was it like when you found out you won and you were going to get a mentor and everything?
It came as a welcome surprise, because I submitted the story and then I put it out of my mind, so I wouldn't be thinking about it constantly. For me, one of the worst emotions, the emotions I least enjoy experiencing, is anticipation, because it completely commands my attention and all the sensations throughout my body. It makes me fidgety, either in a positive or a negative anticipatory way. So I submitted it and I put it aside, did not think about it, and was very surprised, but welcoming of news that I had won, was one of the winners. At that point, I wasn't sure what the story would end up developing into, in terms of trying to weave in the different stories from my family, and bringing their voices to bear, albeit through my interpretation at times of what it is that they told me. I only got to that point through my conversations with Laurie Seed. He was my mentor. And him being a family man himself, it helped to provide a sense of clarity in the direction I wanted to go in. But it was reassuring to win. It was reassuring that there would be, first and foremost, people who would get to read about the experiences of many of my family members I think of them in many ways as unsung heroes. And in many ways, each of the stories speaks to many unsung heroes, and particularly unsung heroes of the African diaspora community here in Australia, and specifically Western Australia.
I'm so glad you found a good mentor with Laurie. What was the process like?
Working with Laurie was wonderful. We didn't get to meet as often as we would have liked because of course, scheduling difficulties. But each time we did meet, it was as though I had known Laurie for 50 years. And I was ever I felt like his niece, and he was my uncle and friend at the same time. And I always enjoyed hearing him speak about his son. And I'm a big sucker for children. So through conversations with Laurie about his son and me insisting that I must meet his son, as well as stories around childhood that then arose out of that, I got the title of my story, Not Child of One's Own, which has a lot of different meanings, I guess, each time I think about it. I come back with something different. But Laurie was he wasn't prescriptive. He didn't tell me that this is the way that you should write, you should explore the subject. But he very much was open to me experimenting with form and having me work within the bounds of that experimentation, whilst encouraging me to refine my writing and to bring out my voice more strongly. So that was very much a breath of fresh air. I don't think going into the mentoring process, I was expecting him to be so open to different ways of writing and relating poetry, I guess. But he was a very wonderful and encouraging, supportive, and overall just big family man.
It is a bit daunting, isn't it, when you are trying to take your work to an editor here, if you're a migrant, because you're often like, oh, are they going to understand? Or are they going to ask me to write in the way they think I should because they have not read many other books from other cultures or something like that? You are worried about that sort of reaction that you get. So I'm very happy Laurie was very open with you and that you enjoyed it. I mean, it was exciting. You got a book launched at the Perth Writers Festival.
Yes, we did. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be at the panel in the end, but I'm assured that everyone was wonderful, which is not at all surprising because each of them is a brilliant human being. But it was great for that opportunity to arise, for the book to be launched at Perth Writers Festival, and for people to for Yerga, Yort and Rafif to engage with people more deeply about what motivated them to write their respective stories.
Yeah, it was very exciting to get my copy in the mail, definitely. So, like, you know, you have a name on a book now.
It's still quite strange. It's still quite strange to look at it. Yeah, but I do like the size of the book. It's a very intimate size.
Yes.
It's very precious.
Tell me, now, are you still going to be writing creative work? And if you do, what is your kind of writing process like? Do you have a routine? What do you do?
I am looking to keep writing, and mostly biographical and autobiographical pieces for myself and for people I care about and people I encounter whose stories I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. In terms of writing process, I don't really have one. It's mostly when I feel the urgency to spit out a few words, then I'll just write them down. or if I feel there's something that's really on my chest and that I need to get out, I will simply just write whatever words come out and leave it at that and just keep building on it over time.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the closest to a process that I have. I rely on urgency a lot. I don't like to push myself to write when I don't necessarily feel the need to, or when there's nothing dear to me enough
mm-hmm.
to make me want to give voice to something.
Okay. Wow. Tell us a bit more. What do you actually do apart from studying this wonderful master's in international relations?
Oh, me, I am a very boring person.
There's the person who's just got herself launched at the Poet Writers Festival.
The person is a hermit. When I'm not stuck in my book, you can often find me walking through the city, cursing high-rise buildings or the 4 or 5 that we have in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
But I do admire architecture and I like to watch people go about their day. So often I'll take strolls and just have a look at what everyone else around me is doing. Usually on my own, people struggle to get me to spend time with them. I'm looking to improve and establish more balance in my life.
So tell me who your favorite Australian female writer is at the moment. Do you have
embarrassingly,
mm-hmm.
I do not read much Australian literature. This is on my to-do list, but I have been reading Mark C. and Cannabis Clark's foreign book, Foreign Soil.
Yeah.
And in fact, I really enjoy her short story, Home. So her work is currently the Australian literature that most resonates with me because it's what I've read or have been pulled to read in a long time. But I do need to broaden my literary horizon and start engaging with more tech.
Well, you know, she's been shortlisted for 2 major prizes at the moment, so...
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
No, she's a wonderful writer. She really is. And to be honest, I can't describe it, so I keep repeating that she really, really is. But that said, I will be looking to engage with more Australian writers, specifically women writers. And hopefully I will learn a lot through that process. I'll certainly make a lot more time for it.
Well, Maxine wrote the foreword to the book, and she talks about your story in awash with kaleidoscopic memories, hovering.
Yes,
so how does it feel for you to have your idol talk about your story? Like, this is a person whose work you think is a great writer, and she's writing about you.
Yes, I think maybe part of me dissociated when I read her little summary of my story, like strict compartmentalization, like yes, she said something wonderful, wow, but then didn't allow myself to really feel that moment. Otherwise, maybe I would have collapsed from being overjoyed. But she described it again as I would have liked it to be described and as only she could describe it in the same vein. It really spoke to the urgency of the story
mm-hmm.
as well as to, I can't think of another term, I tried.
She seems to get it straight away. She's talking about how you tell stories and how you talk about your family story.
And I guess one thing that really resonated with me in the summary that she wrote was her noting that the story reflects the oral tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly the case. And the way that it arose, it was through conversations with my family members and through me asking them questions and then them feeling comfortable enough to just keep sharing bits of themselves with me. But there's an interesting thing in that, because you are taking something that is orally and verbally communicated to you, right? Continuing that rich African, more specifically Zimbabwean and Shona tradition, and then you're putting it into words, into a written form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to understand the significance of that act of taking something that is in many ways meant to be spoken, but then putting it into text, and whether or not there is a kind of violence in that, or it once again highlights the complex nature of translation, translating one thing from one form into another. But I really do like that element as well. And Maxine was very good to me when she noted that.
It's very hard, isn't it? Because you don't know if, like, you're jotting down the event, the story as you've heard it, and you don't know whether the story as it has been told to you, like, one, you don't know whether you're going to do it justice once you write it down rather than orally, but the second part of that is, like, you've written this down, it's kind of permanent. And that's great for archiving and making sure the story itself doesn't get lost if someone isn't there to hand it down. But it also means that there's a version of written events of the story, a one written version. Who's to say your written version is the right one? Whatever you've been told orally, just keep passing the story on, right? Then people can continue to storytell the way they want.
No, that's true.
Is that what you meant by violence in going from oral to written?
Yes, that is what I meant in that moment, yeah. And also, it seems as though when you put something that is part of an oral tradition into written text, it undermines the former.
Yes.
It privileges the written form of the
As if the oral isn't good enough, kind of, to continue as an archival record.
And it's part of what, in many ways, because African societies have strong oral traditions, and so for a lot of us, there aren't many written records of our history. And so when Europeans came, that lack of a written record was taken as a lack of a history, which resulted in Africans being relegated to the stage of prehistory, as though we never existed in either time or space.
Yeah.
It's a particular linear conception of time and space of the European imagination. So that all plays into translating something that was told to me orally into the written form. Even as I acknowledge that when I was speaking with my parents and the rest of my family members, they were aware that I would then transcribe it in some ways, but also translate it into a written form.
You're welcome. Thank you for chatting to me. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that I might have missed out on?
Oh, no. I think I have spoken enough. It feels strange to speak at length, knowing that people will be listening to me speak at length. So thank you for allowing me that time and for what has been a lovely conversation.